We would like to acknowledge that the land which we are gathered on today is the traditional territory of the Anishinaabe Nation, specifically the Chippewa Tri-Council, comprised of the Chippewas of Beausoleil, Rama, and Georgina Island First Nations, and more recently, the Mississaugas of the Credit River First Nation. Ontario is covered by 46 treaties and other agreements and is home to many Indigenous nations from across Turtle Island, including the Inuit and the Métis. These treaties and other agreements, including the One Dish with One Spoon Wampum Belt Covenant, are agreements to peaceably share and care for the land and its resources. Other Indigenous nations, Europeans, and newcomers were invited into this covenant in the spirit of respect, peace, and friendship. Most of us have come here as settlers, immigrants, or newcomers in this generation or generations past. We are all treaty people. Every day, we are mindful of broken covenants, and we strive to make this right. We commit to collaborating based on the foundational assumption that Indigenous peoples have their power, strength, and competency to develop culturally specific strategies for their communities. We are dedicated to honoring Indigenous self-determination, history, and culture, and are committed to moving forward in the spirit of reconciliation and respect with all First Nation, Métis, and Inuit people. Good morning, everyone, and welcome to Beyond the Stethoscope, a podcast focused on hospice palliative care. My name is Linda Meeks, and I'm your host for today. I am one of the education facilitators at the North Simcoe Muskoka Hospice Palliative Care Network. Today, one of our nurse consultants, Nancy Good Kennedy, will be joining us with a guest speaker, Tiv Mataraz, who is the spiritual care provider at the Collingwood General and Marine Hospital. Welcome, Nancy, and welcome, Tiv.
Thank you.
Nancy, I'll let you take it away.
All right. Thanks, Linda. It's great to be here. I just wanted to take a moment, first of all, to introduce Tiv and get an idea of how Tiv actually got to us at the Collingwood Hospital. So Tiv was awakened spiritually probably around about the age of 25 after an intense search for meaning of life. And shortly afterwards, he serendipitously found Jane, his spouse-to-be. Tiv and Jane have been married since 1989 and they have two adult daughters. Tiv became curious about how computers worked and led him to finishing a degree in computer science at the University of Western. He's had an intense career in software developing over the years and became curious about spirituality. Did some studies at the Tyndale University and then worked with Bethel Hospice in Caledon. His desire to grow spiritually ended him up at Royal Victoria Hospital in September of 2020, where he did begin his residency in clinical spiritual care. That passion led him to serve community, and we have been lucky enough at the Collingwood General Marine Hospital to have Tiv come and join us as a spiritual care provider in July of 2022. Welcome, Tiv. I can't tell you how happy I am to have you here with us today. This is a topic that is, I believe, undertouched, and I'm sure we're going to uncover some great information today. When we talk about spiritual care, I believe that palliative care is one of the few specialties in which we recognize the importance of that spiritual care. And there's certainly mounting international evidence that's tailored toward the provision of spiritual care and threading it through into a palliative approach. Spiritual care workers may have particular skills that help us to engage with people on issues of significance. It's important for all health professionals to have a sense of how important spirituality is for their patients. And I just wonder, Tiv, what do you mean by spiritual care? What is spiritual care?
Spiritual care sort of attends to the spiritual and religious needs as someone copes with illness or loss or grief. And we just come alongside and help them with their emotions, their new physical diagnosis, maybe help build relationships. You know, we're really embodied souls and we're really and soul bodies. And there's all these sort of integrated parts and dimensions of ourselves. Aside from just the physical, there's this spiritual, there's our will, there's our emotions, there's our mind, all our social interactions. This is all our soul. We look at all the dimensions of the person, of the patient or resident, and it's not just necessarily dividing it up into parts, which we tend to do. It's almost like these overlapping dimensions of ourselves, what it means to be a human person. And yeah, but the meaning and purpose is certainly something that we can look at. I think of a lot of times I think of a picture of my hand and I look at it, and that the palm of my hand, I see belonging. And if my thumb, I see love, that people are loved, or they're looking for one of the core longings is love and belonging. And then I look at my index finger and I think of the rooted and integrated. And then the taller finger, I think of understanding ourselves, understanding who we are spiritually, and understanding the healthcare team around us, our families around us. And then I think of the fourth thing with these core longings is significance, like we're worth. A lot of people have some shame and fear at their core. So sort of look at one of these, the significance that we have. And yeah, so, wow, yeah, it's such a big topic. What is spiritual care? What do we mean by spiritual care? It's just sort of this invisible connections in us that we're self-aware, what makes us a human person. It's such a wide, varied topic. But as people come into the hospital with a new diagnosis, or they become palliative, then we can come alongside and sort of explore all these areas with the patient.
You know what I love, Tib, is how you speak to the holistic care of a patient. And I love the analogy of using your hand. I'll try and remember most of those things as I work through my practice, because it's a visual, right? And it's a reminder that we're really developing an understanding about all of those issues that are significant to people. And that's what holistic care brings. And you're coming right alongside, as you said. Palliative care may be a subspecialty, right? And within palliative care, we have subspecialties as well. Spiritual advisor or spiritual care is certainly a large part of that. And I just often wonder, those spiritual needs, and you're doing your rounds, is there something in particular about a hospital patient, whether they be a palliative patient or not?
Yeah. In the hospital, we get referrals from the healthcare team and nurses and family, and I usually attend those first. And so, you know, sometimes it's a new diagnosis, and people are just trying to figure out how to cope with that. And sometimes it's just a short stay in the hospital, but you know, they become somewhat isolated. And sort of maybe facing reality of their existence for the first time. And so everyone's different. And a lot of times after the referrals are complete, I'll just do rounds, and I'll actually just walk into every single room and see if a patient is receptive or not. It's interesting. Sometimes a person will say, well, I don't need spiritual care. And what they mean by that is they think other people can benefit from spiritual care more than they can. And sometimes there's been some kind of hindrance in their spiritual history, and they see spiritual care as something that's sort of a hindrance to their healing. That's, you know, we try and assess that quickly, you know, spirituality being a hindrance or a help to you. And then you explore their spirituality and say, how has that spirituality helped you in the past? And then how can that help you now in your feeling the loneliness and isolation? A lot of it comes down to loneliness and belonging, even if it's something super painful that they're going through, or if it's something not painful. At the root, underneath a lot of their behaviors and thoughts and search for meaning is this aloneness.
Mm-hmm. I wonder too, when we think about the provision of spiritual care, because it's not just isolated to TIV, right? This is something that nurse at the bedside can manage in small increments. It is something that certainly we see as palliative experts. And my understanding is that over the past 50 years or so, there have been many studies that do show that a shorter hospital stay is the outcome. Sometimes these patients may have, say, improved pain management, motivation to complete tasks of healing. I see that often after they have a visit with spiritual advisory or spiritual care. And physiologically, when we talk about heart rate and blood pressure, stress related, some improvements in that area too.
Exactly.
But I wonder, Tim, I'm sorry, go ahead.
No. I was going to say that too. It's uncanny how many times nurses will say that after a spiritual care visit, how that all of these things you've just listed are true. There is the body reacts. The body's integrated with our spirituality. The heart rate and the blood pressure goes down. I get that all the time.
Overall sense of well-being. Just Tiv, you giving them that all over sense of well-being. But I wonder, do you think the needs are any different for a dying patient?
Well, as we talked about, I think we all have these longings, you know, purpose, meaning. For dying persons, they've come up to this hard reality that, they may be moving to the other side, to the other dimensions. Yeah, for them, I think I'd look at one of the terms I like to use is unfinished business. And it's another way of saying forgiveness. Is there anything that you feel is unfinished business with anyone in your life that you might want to look at? There's, you know, fear of dying, and there's fear of death. And sometimes it's interesting to try and, not interesting, it's sort of essential to distinguish between, is there a fear of dying or is it a fear of death? That's important to try and distinguish to help them travel through these fears of dying or death and sort of get into this sort of radical acceptance mode as they go through the stages, the Kubler-Ross stages, and I guess denial, anger, negotiation, and acceptance. And it might not necessarily be in that order, or some of them might come back. I think those are some of the differences. But yeah, like with palliative care, it's important to maybe fish out the differences between dying and death. And some people are very comfortable about where they're going and what's on the other side. And some people are scared of the pain and suffering that they might have to endure in the process of dying. Those are important assessments to do, really, with dying
people. I also like that. Is the patient afraid of dying or are they afraid of death? Mm-hmm. That sparks a lot of thought, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. And if it sparks thought for you and I, imagine what it's doing for your patient, mm-hmm. right? I wonder, when we know that people are dying, that they have outstanding needs, right? That need to be loved, as you mentioned earlier, the need to find meaning and purpose. And I guess that the need for dignity and respect. We know that I almost think of those as being basic needs for the dying. When you help patients work through these complex emotions, and we know they are complex, right? Sometimes depression, regret. I've seen anger for sure. And sometimes even feelings of guilt from their past. And I know that often taking the cues from the patient and actually knowing whether we are causing more harm than good, being able to measure that. How does that work for you, Tiv? How do you provide? Like, what do you do when you go to see a patient?
I think this is super important. It's super important that when we see patients, we like you say, we take the cues from the patient. We try and figure out where they're at, and it is very complex. Like we, you know, there may be depression or guilt or shame, and some of these emotions don't come out until maybe a second or a third visit. And then you think, oh, okay, maybe this is what's really going on underneath some of that behavior. It can be very complex, but it's very important to, as we create an empathy bubble and compassion for these, for the patients and residents that we travel with, it's very important to figure out where they're at and not try and give them solutions or solve their problems. Or, you know, empathy can be traveling with someone through joy, or empathy can be traveling with someone through dark valleys. We go with them. And, you know, it's sort of a person-centered or patient-centered approach where we really try and create some kind of empathy bubble with some really good boundaries that we don't get sucked in ourselves as providers too much. And yet we do want to try and understand exactly where they are and what they're going through. That's the approach I do. You try and build some kind of congruence. Sometimes you use, when you're looking for this empathy, imagining what they're going through, you might want to pull up some kind of feeling or story in your own life that really happened to you. And sometimes you can tell the patient a quick little blurb about a story where that's something similar has maybe happened to you, just to gain trust and congruence. And then they know that you kind of feel what they're feeling a little bit, or you have some idea of what they're going through. It's kind of a safe and effective use of yourself in a way to gain that congruence. And sometimes you don't even have to say the story that where you felt something maybe similar to them, or where you can just have that embodied in yourself as you're traveling along and listening and being present with the patient, because that's important. It's important to empathize and have compassion for what they may be going through.
I know that I have taught nurses both through clinical work as well as being a palliative nurse consultant. And I try very hard to help my students and fellow nurses. And when Tiv, I often think about what I call the window being wide open. And that is a point in time where our patients may express to us something that makes us understand that perhaps there's fear or regret or something of that root. And we need to respond to that in the moment. That's why I speak strongly of deep, deep listening. And I just wonder, when you're trying to help people develop a sense of meaning where they feel that there hasn't been any, or that there isn't any meaning at present, what are the goals of spiritual care when you're dealing with that, with the dying patient? I know we speak about hope, we speak about meaning and forgiveness and love, but that deep longing maybe is probably the best word that I can put to that. What is your goal when you go to see that patient?
Well, one of the acronyms that comes to mind that I think about is an acronym called PLEASE. And in PLEASE, the P stands for presence, and the L stands for listening, and the E stands for empathy, and the A stands for acceptance, and the S stands for safe place, safe relationship, and safe environment. And then E is encounter. This doesn't always happen, but that's my hope. That's my hope is, and it happens a lot. It can happen with, it's crazy, like 80, 90% of people, you offer some kind of meditation, depending where they're at and depending where their spirituality is, you offer some kind of meditation or contemplation exercise or prayer. And the E part is this encounter with something deeper. There's a deeper longing with us. And It's kind of a crackling energy with family and patients, because especially when it's palliative or end of life, it becomes a very sacred moment. It's almost like we're standing on holy ground and then taking the cues from the patient where they're at and just slowing it down and meditating and just giving over and offering it up to something bigger than us, something transcendent. That is amazing. And sometimes with a patient that hasn't had a lot of sort of religious background or any kind of explicit spirituality that way, but you figured out some of their implicit spirituality through maybe it's nature or through reading or intellectualism or whatever their spiritual pathway is, I'll do a prayer or meditation. And a lot of times it's alongside that hand thing that I think of, the belonging. And we just offer it up that this person is unconditionally loved. They're a child of God or the universe. They're safe and they're integrated and they're not isolated. They're connected. And I just ask for increased understanding about who they are, their true selves as they are, and who others are around them, and their family and their friendships and the healthcare team. And yeah, and then the significance. The significance is a big one, and that moves people quite a bit and get quite emotional when we talk about their worth, and they're worth much to the universe. They're worth much to themselves. We tend to be hard on ourselves, and they're worth much to the healthcare team and their friends and family. Yeah, that's my experience. And it's amazing, like the people, you know, people just want to be seen and known, and you know, this, you know, talk about this dignity that we have for human persons right to the end, even as their body starts to shut down. Well, there's still the person is still there, you know, that's still the person. And it's sad sometimes when you see a family or friends that can't deal with that and they need to run away from that, but no, that person is there still, and you still need to accompany that person. And there's much beauty, in it as they transition and the body shuts down. And the window thing is a great metaphor, analogy. Nancy, I love metaphors and images like that, and very visual. I'm going to keep that window open metaphor in place too. Thanks. Mm-hmm.
I also think, Tiv, that it's a moment of absolute beauty. I don't think there's anything that can compare to the relationship that you develop with a patient in that moment. And that regaining their inner peace or helping them die with a sense that their life has had value and that they've had a positive impact, no matter where they are in those last moments, right? I worked as a community nurse for many years, and I always said that there's no honor like being called to a home to pronounce a death. And I think not only has the family experienced a spiritual moment with their loved one passing away at home, you also have the opportunity to then deal with the family, have a time, an empathetic time with family in their very vulnerable moments. And nothing compares to that. I think when we talk about issues that distress our dying patients, what are some of the things, Tiv, that you have seen that would help our listeners to understand that this actually is quite natural to see this distress? Natural when you know the patient. What if they've had poor family dynamics or something of that? Mm-hmm.
Yeah. The family dynamics are difficult. Sometimes, we're in like ICU or somewhere, and it's just sometimes you get so much family crowded in, and everyone has a different take on it and a different opinion. And sometimes it's good to offer up a plan or an idea of each person maybe says goodbye to that loved one, or sometimes you want to create an opportunity where that patient or resident just wants to talk one-on-one with a spiritual care provider or the nurse or a PSW, whoever is going to provide that spiritual care, in that moment, looking for opportunities to have the patient and resident have those one-on-ones with people, and then even one-on-ones with their family, have them go in one at a time. And even after the loved one passes away, have them go in and spend as much time as they need to say goodbye to that person. And sometimes you'll get a strong family member saying, oh yeah, our pastor has been in here already and we're good and I don't need any help. But then before I leave, I'll just offer up, if anyone wants to talk, I'll just be out here in the hallway. And it's amazing how, you know, like at one point, a brother of a sister who was dying of cancer at a young age, he said, put up his hand, yeah, I need to come and talk to you. You try and create these opportunities to, this is a family systems theory, Bowen theory, and it's really worth researching. Because there is this interconnection with family systems. There's this up and down, and then it's like a mobile, and the whole mobile starts rocking when one part of the mobile starts rocking, right? And it's really worth looking into some of these principles of Bowen theory to try and understand some of the family dynamics. You got the oldest person in the family, and you've got the youngest, and some of those dynamics. Like half the Bowen theory is on the order of who you are in the family, whether you're the oldest or the second oldest or the middle child or the youngest. And then the unfinished business. Sometimes people are super ready to, they're tired of the treatment and they're super ready to go on to the next life. But they're still worried about how their family is going to cope without them. You know, there's this really beautiful family connections where they're really going to miss their loved one when they leave, right? And that person that's dying is really concerned about how their wife or their kids are going to cope, or their family members going to cope without them. So it's hard for them sometimes to let that go as a patient or a resident.
I think, Tiv, as I hear you explaining some of the things that you have encountered, I'll bet many of our listeners that work in palliative care are experiencing these conversations as well, and maybe just not exactly sure how to address that. So I think when I reflect on visits that I have had with patients and trying to help them make sense of everything, and how they feel about some of the changes that have happened in their life, particularly as they reach the end of life, and getting around to where they are today, right? And when you talk about leaving family behind and how will family cope, and helping them bring trust that they have provided well for their family. And those one-on-one discussions for family members to have with their dying loved, I think is a really great thing to promote, because I think it does give privacy, number one. And if there's something in those last moments that needs to be said, they actually are given the opportunity, and they haven't called for the opportunity, right? Mm-hmm. It has actually been presented to them, which I think is wonderful. I love that. Mm-hmm. If we have patients that actually experience what we call spiritual or existential distress, when I think we look at it as though it can be maybe the backbone of what we refer to as a total pain, when we haven't been able to touch their pain tip with pain medicine, right? And the reason that we can't touch their pain with pain medicine is because it's a deep pain, just like we have deep listening. Something that lives deep, deep in someone's soul takes more than medicine to bring that out.
Mm-hmm,
right?
Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
No, go ahead, Tiff.
Yeah, it's something I've been noticing. It's something I used to notice my mother saying was, you know, you ask her, where does it hurt? It hurts all over. I mean, there's just no way of saying where, like, is it your toe or where is it that you're feeling? It's all over. But then when I hear that, and I hear that with patients, and I think of all those other dimensions, I think of, okay, there is some excellent pain management and palliative care kind of pain management. And all that's just so bad at it. And it's like, okay, it's not that you're having this physical pain. Maybe it's a social pain, or maybe it's emotional pain, or some kind of, in your mind, there's some thoughts or something that you just can't reconcile. So, you know, there's the mind, there's the heart, there's the emotions, there's that core deep spiritual place, like you're saying, Nancy, when you go into that deep listening, that it's all integrated and all these dimensions kind of overlap in this holistic care idea. And it, sometimes we just can't tend to, in our culture now, we tend to try and separate the body and the spirit, and we try and just treat the body. And why isn't this pain medication satisfying this person's pain? And then the suffering, you know, suffering, the difference between pain and suffering is suffering. Pain is one thing, like the physical pain, but then suffering can be greater than our pain, right? Where suffering includes some of this maybe spiritual distress or emotional distress or some mental distress or some, you know, some spiritual distress and hopelessness. All these different dimensions are factors.
I hear you, Tiv, and just touching on spiritual pain, just talking about it and saying this out loud will certainly be of benefit to our listeners, right? And sometimes our patients grapple with what has given their life meaning and really think to what will sustain the life that they've left behind, right? How will they be remembered? What is their legacy? Mm-hmm. I often think of those pieces as well.
Yeah, I was just talking with a patient yesterday, and she's not really palliative, but you know, she wants to be palliative and she wants to die. But then you go back into her history of this job that she used to do, and that she used to, you know, a time in her life where she was significant and she was contributing to her community and her family. And you go back into that. And I think of my dad too, who's turning 85 tomorrow, and I talked to him on the phone, and I try and go back into that time when he opened up his restaurant business in the late 60s and talk about, I get all the stories about all the little things that he had to go through, and you know, he loves to talk about that. I love to hear about it because I hear about things that I didn't know. I was a kid at that time, and it enlivens him. I should write it down. We should do some kind of legacy.
Yes.
Writing. I need to start writing it down. And we can do that with the patients and residents too. We do some kind of legacy writing. And then once the patient does pass on and die, it's a gift we can give to the family. We can compile all of this legacy writing that we compiled together. And it's kind of like a booklet or a story of the legacy and significance of this person that lived the
such
life.
Beautiful so, work.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It is such beautiful work, right?
Yeah.
Do you see barriers to you being able to provide spiritual advice? Do you see barriers at all, particularly within the hospital walls?
I think it's a privilege and honor, and it's wonderful to be in this role because I get to advocate for spiritual health. And some of the things we're trying to do is sort of group meditation times with staff, and we've done a couple of those. You know, there's a tendency for us to be like so rational mind, and I think deep down it does bother nurses and staff that, you know, they're into this kind of machine and this kind of time thing where they have to treat so many patients and be on top of everything with the patients. And there's not time for them to sometimes empathize and show their compassion for the patients. And I think that bothers them. But then if we can be open to this idea that there is, why do we do this? Because we need to balance it with the empathy and the compassion. There's an emotional mind. We don't want to be too emotional. And there's a rational mind. We don't want to be too rational because we start to lose our empathy and our compassion. And then there's a wise mind, which is kind of in between. And this is something that they talk about in DBT, dialectical behavior therapy. And it's wonderful that our outpatient mental health has been working on some DBT, setting up some DBT programs. And this mindfulness, this group meditation, this advocating for spiritual health and doing this deep listening and going deeper is something that we have this wonderful opportunity to look into this and advocate for this with our staff. And I think when it goes deep like that, it becomes very motivating. The spirit combines with the will, and then everything permeates through the soul of each PERS healthcare worker, and the soul of the hospital, and the soul of the hospice. And yeah, there's a corporate soul. And I think that's what excites me about this role much is how we can advocate for spiritual health, holistic spiritual health.
I think this is why we love having you, Tiff, right? Because you can lead that and you do a really good job at it. I want you to know that. Thanks. You do a really good job at it. When you think about the resources that you have in hospital, and when I was doing some research for our podcast today, I spent a fair amount of figuring out what type of resources do you need to be successful, or I should say, do we need to be successful? Not just you, mm-hmm. Tiff, because you are leading us as a spiritual advisor, but things like music and prayer and meditation, bringing in family and friends, and having, I don't know, other supportive communities come together as resources. Are you finding that something that is part of your role? Is it something we need to work on? How do you feel about the resources that you do have?
I'm really, really encouraged by some of the churches in the Collingwood area that meet and they just communicate what they're doing. There's no overlap. It's very encouraging. And we have some chaplains on call. There's 8 people on call. When I'm not here after hours and it's end of life or some crisis, then there are spiritual care people on call. It's just encouraging that I'm really not in this alone. When I was at RVH, it was a team of 6 or 7. And I thought, wow, when I come here, I'm just going to be by myself. But there is this wonderful community. And we are, and I am trying to look forward and I've got some elders that can help with Indigenous patients lined up if they need to come in and tell some sacred stories or do some kind of smudging rituals with that. So looking at that, and then we're looking also at some of our staff are from Islam or Muslim faith. We're trying to look at accommodating so that I'm really encouraged with what's happening in the community and this awareness of trying to connect people to the different faith groups. Yeah, the meditation is something that's really in my heart. Music therapy, as we know, or music and palliative care and hospices. I think it's sort of like poetry. It's sort of like prayer. Praying twice because you've got the music and then you've got the lyrics. And it's something that I'm thinking about is getting some kind of speaker to connect to my phone. We do have keyboard here and we do have people from the community that will come in and do memorial services in the cafeteria once a year for staff that have died and looking to start that up again. Oh, wow. Yeah, I do hope always scripture writings. I do have that kind of thing here on my shelf. To hand out to people and poetry and devotional materials. Rituals are super important to doing some wow ICU and they just pull off all the gear and let the person go. Then there's some beautiful rituals of music and prayers that we can do that the family or patient in their faith tradition that we can do. It's very powerful. It's very beautiful. And the staff appreciate it too.
Yes. Yeah, I often think about this or lack thereof, but it does sound as though you're really well in tune with the community and able to gain resources that way. And the Indigenous population, I'm glad to hear that you have that connection as well. And I often think when we talk about music, I think about it really enhancing literally our rhythm of life. right? And I don't know if you know the tune. I think it's called A Robin and a Wren, or Robin or a Wren. And it's by Jeffrey Tweet. If you are familiar, or anyone that's listening today, please have a listen. I think it's a beautiful tune, and it's a good way for us to kind of sum up what we're doing, the work that we're doing today. And I think according to the International Consensus Conference, I have a quote: the spirituality is defined as a dynamic and intrinsic aspect of humanity through which persons seek ultimate meaning, purpose, and transcendence, and experience relationship to self, family, others, community, society, nature, and the significant or the sacred. Spirituality is expressed through beliefs, values, traditions, and practices. And I really think that this definition really highlights the diversity of ways that individuals may experience their spirituality. And it also underscores how spirituality can underlie our core values, which may inform choices maybe for patients, that for patients really from survivorship right up until the end of their life. And always digging for a meaning to, that's the way I kind of think about when I go to see my patients, is every one of us are digging for a meaning. Mm-hmm. And any way that we do that to help them.
That's one of those core one of those core longings on my hand. It's belonging, and then it's unconditional love, and then it's safety and security, understanding, and then this is purpose and meaning here, and then this is the significance one, and they all kind of lead to this kind of belonging. That's this hand thing that's really always coming up.
Tim, I just wanted to take a moment to say thank you so much for being with us today. We've had some really great conversation, and looking forward seeing you in the hospital and continuing the great work that you're doing. Thank you for being with us.
Thank you, Nancy. My pleasure.
Thank you. Yes, thank you so much, Tiv. That was an absolutely amazing, beautiful conversation, Nancy and Tiv. Thank you so much. Brought a tear to my eye in a couple instances. And Tiv, I've never met you, and we're obviously on Zoom, but I can actually feel that wonderful energy that you exude. Your residents, patients are very lucky to have you, as well as the staff, and for the culture of the hospital. Thank you so much.
Thanks a lot. Yeah, thank you.